Today we are discussing the story Welcome to Paradise by Mandy Hager, and joining me in our Wellington studio is writer and reviewer Tracy Farr. Hey there, Tracy.
Talofa, Jesse.
Talofa, lovely to have you in. Welcome. And shall we start? Would you like to read a bit of this story?
Yeah, I'd love to. That'd be a really good lead-in to talking about it. Stop me if I go too far. Okay, Welcome to Paradise. It was a glimpse into paradise. The sun caught the old town first, its jumble of faded pastels glowing like the gilded ceilings of the Vatican, yellow, pink, rose, white, red, orange, grey and cadmium. Medieval plasterwork rising joyously from the silky sea as it had done for more centuries than she could even comprehend. Next, the light would hit the mountains up beyond, their dark wooded valleys and bare silver rock faces diffused behind the daily haze of early morning cloud. By 10, the cloud would burn away, heat smothering the land with a shimmer of dry roasted air. Lucy would wake, tie on her sarong and carry her freshly brewed coffee out onto the balcony to watch the day begin. She would hear them first, the crunch of footsteps on gravel in between the tracks, always in bands of two or three, sometimes four, though never more than five. A larger group was far too obvious, red rag to a bull. At first she was surprised by their tidiness, pristine white trainers, crisp shirts and jeans, mirrored sunglasses, spotless backpacks. Once she'd even seen a label still dangling from a pack. And they all had mobile phones glued to one ear, chatting as they cast worried glances back over their shoulders or peered intently up the tracks ahead. The white of their eyes and teeth flashed in the first probing rays of sun, and early evening, when the last few drifted by after the sun had sunk, that same flashing glow of white reminded her of the bioluminescence found in strange alien sea creatures hidden from the known world. The irony wasn't lost on her. She hated that in some minds such links were literal. Shall we stop there or keep going, do you think, Jesse?
Yeah, that was where I was going to stop, Tracy. Yeah. Thanks. And it's not entirely clear at this point exactly where they are in the world. There's that Vatican is a bit of a hint.
Yeah, that's right. It takes a little while for us to find out who everyone is in this story and where they are. Although, Mandy Hager sort of invites us into the story with this very attractive, very beautiful kind of idea of paradise, a glimpse into paradise and all this beautiful colour. We figure we're probably not in New Zealand because there's this talk of the Vatican, as you said, and the old town and the mountains beyond. So that doesn't sound like we're in New Zealand, so we know that. But it does. We do get a long way into the story before we really sort out who's who and how they fit together.
Mm. There are colours, though, straight away in the story, and that was one of the things that one of my correspondents mentioned. That was Irene, who got in touch, and she really enjoyed the way the writer used colour to contrast the soft colour of the Mediterranean buildings, the brand new clothes of the refugees, Lucy's red hair, and most importantly, the skin colour of the two main protagonists, the white girl and the black boy.
Yeah, it's true, isn't it? There's colour kind of pops out of the page right through this story, and it's used to really it's used really strongly to signal different things in different parts of the story, and for me that colour that infuses the first paragraph or two of the story, we've got this really gentle lead in, and it's that first sound of the first sense that's awakened or kind of, you know, tingling in this story is sight, and it's when we get to the next sense of sound where we hear the crunch of footsteps on gravel. That's when we start to say, well, hold on, who's this going to be that's coming into this that's making this sound and coming into the story next? So we move on to a sense of being slightly disoriented or unsettled and not quite knowing who these people are that are crunching.
In fact, yeah, I wasn't even sure that they were people in the first few sentences. I didn't know what she was describing.
Exactly. And so it's a lovely way of really unsettling us as readers. You know, we've got this lovely coffee on the balcony, and you know, we've got this sense of leisure and beauty and holiday, and then And then it's like, well, who are these people? And then a little bit further along from where we left off the reading, we get the next lot of characters, if you like, introduced into the story, and that's when the local police are introduced, and we really start to get set up this sense of unsettled unease really starts to build then.
And we find out that we're somewhere on the border between France and Italy, and these African, mostly men, are trying to cross the border and the police are trying to stop them. And Lucy and her family are somewhere near where all this is going down. And what looked like at first like it was going to be paradise is, I don't know if spoiled is the word, but certainly affected somewhat by the fact of seeing this go past every day.
Yeah, it is. So, you know, when the story starts, it's the start of the day. There's coffee on the balcony. And as we've said, there's this sense of beauty and everything. And then we get this unsettling build up to these boys. It takes us a long time to find what their status is. And it's still left sort of not really clearly stated. We're a long way into the story before we find specifically where they are, which is in Menton in the south of France.
Which is an important place in New Zealand literature, isn't it?
It is indeed, and it's an important place in terms of the writer Mandy Hager as well, because she was in fact the Catherine Mansfield Menton Fellow in 2014, and so this is a story that really invites, you know, I think with a lot of short stories, we would hope with a short story that we can look at the story on the page or on the screen and that it speaks for itself and it stands on its own two feet. And this story very much does. But it's also a story that invites us to look at the wider context that it sits in. And one of those is the context of Menton and New Zealand literature and everything that represents. But the other sort of context it invites us to look at is the political context and the geopolitical context and the social justice kind of context. And these are really important things for the writer. And we might get on to talk a little bit about that. But
Catherine sent me an email. She said she just read the story and it made her cry. She found it very moving. She's in Christchurch and she says, as we debate a building in the square, this story made her really think about people. And I guess that's one of the affecting things about the story, is that it's easy to have this idea of refugees, migrants in Europe as being this kind of intellectual concept, but the value of a short story is it can make it very personal. And that's sort of what Lucy's going through, isn't it? She's being very personally affected by these others, by someone whose problems she doesn't share.
Yeah, she really is. The story really turns on this kind of moment of awareness for Lucy, a moment that when she realizes, and as she says in the story, it comes out of nowhere, that she has an ability to act. So it's a classic kind of turning point of self-awareness or self-knowledge and personal growth. And she spends a lot of the story telling us that she feels guilty and talking about her privileged position and talking about her parents discussing this and being really moved by this. I guess we should say to set up the story for people who haven't read it is that what we find as we read through about the first half of the story is that Lucy is our teenage protagonist. We guess from what she says that she's probably in her teens, probably her late teens, and she's in Menton, in the south of France, with her parents. They're all New Zealanders, and they're there because Lucy's mum has 6 months of research time in Menton, and so Lucy's there, kind of on their coattails to have a good time. But she's spending all her time feeling guilty and feeling privileged, and sort of thinking, what can I do? How can I act? And the story builds to this moment of her acting, kind of out of nowhere. And so it's really affecting, partly because it does come out of nowhere. The story really turns on that point, and I think what the other thing that's really affecting about this story is the ambiguous and ambivalent ending that it has. You know, what happens. We've decided with Short Story Club, haven't we, Jesse, that we don't talk, that we can give away spoilers because we've given people plenty of time to
read.
That's
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So what the moment that it builds to is that Lucy walks across the border one night after dinner. She's taken to going for walks in the evening after dinner because they're staying just a kilometre from the border between Italy and France, and she takes to going for walks and walking back. And because she's white, and in the story it's very much in terms of white and black, so we'll talk in terms of white and black, because she's white, although she's foreign, she can pass, in inverted commas, and she can pass across the border very freely. And so she does that, but she gets talking to one of these young African boys from Eritrea, and she says, "I'll walk you across," because they're all trying to make their way from Italy into France. And she does walk him across. And then she says at the very end of the story, when she has been successful in walking him across, she says, "Watched him walk away, this tall lion of a boy, alone on this tidy suburban street with the darkening Mediterranean Sea below, hugged herself. Welcome to paradise," she whispered. She couldn't quite suppress a shudder. So, you know, that welcome to paradise could have been a really neat, sort of almost too neat of an ending for the story. Mm. And it ties it back to the title and it ties it back to the beginning. But then Mandy Hager gives us this kind of, you know, punch to the stomach, because Lucy says she couldn't quite suppress a shudder. She's not quite sure what she's done herself. She's kind of come to this moment of adulthood, to agent, you know, she's taken agency in her life in this way, and she's not quite sure what to do. And I think that's what's so affecting about the story, is that we're along there with Lucy. We're not quite sure what she's done either, but we're on her side.
And she also realises that once she gets him across, he immediately asks if she can go back and get his friends.
Yeah.
And it's a great kind of moment where she realises how much bigger the problem is than just helping out one boy. I notice she often talks about her parents, and they sort of, I think Shirley, who emailed me, points this out, the parents justify or rationalise what's going on. And I wonder if that sort of division between the sort of young idealism and the more cynical parents is one of the divisions in the story, as well as the geographical divisions, the racial divisions?
Yeah, I think so. The story is told in a close third person, so it's told from Lucy's point of view, but in a third person. But her parents are very present in the story, and they kind of provide the context that they're the ones who are watching the television and seeing what's happening in the world very close to them when they're in the Mediterranean, and who are commenting on it and who are placing it in a political, a geopolitical context. And Lucy doesn't make those statements. She just feels the guilt. So in a way, the parents are there to provide the background for us, the reader, as well. But they're also there for... I read them more as providing, they're sort of providing a background that lets Lucy consider these things. You know, she's clearly grown up in a household where these things are debated and they're noticed and they're recognised and they're considered, and that to me, that was part of their role to me. What I also noticed was that New Zealanders in this story, it's really interesting, New Zealanders are the people in this story who show compassion and acts of kindness and who show empathy. Lucy talks about seeing the local people turn away and give her dirty looks when she's talking to these young men who are variously described in the story as, you know, quote unquote illegals. So Lucy's the one getting the dirty looks when she's talking to these young men, when she's showing kindness. And it's also described quite early on, her mother takes water to one of the young women. So it's almost setting up New Zealanders as the hope for empathy and kindness, and sort of, which I found really interesting and lovely.
Tracy Farr, thanks so much for coming in for Short Story Club. Really enjoyed it.
Thanks, Jesse.
Thank you, Irene Coleman, for your email. You are the winner this week. You win the new adult novel by Mandy Hager. It's called Heloise. So we'll get in touch with you about that. And there'll be a new short story next week on the show. It's Reflections Reflections in a Moving Surface by Vincent O'Sullivan. The link to that story is on our webpage now, or you can just search Short Story Club. Here's a new innovation on the RNZ website, and you'll find each week's story as well as the podcasts of our past Short Story Club sessions.